I speak to you in the name of the God of mercy and justice. Amen. I spent the fifth grade in Comstock Elementary School on Northwest 18th Avenue in Miami, Florida. I know Dave McAllister knows where that is. It's still going, actually. I looked it up on the internet. It's still going. Population of the school has changed since I was there 66 years ago. My first 4 years in that same school have been generally happy. From Mrs. Kyle in first grade, to Mrs. Landrum in second grade, to Mrs. Bird in third grade, to Mrs. Butler in fourth grade. All my teachers have been kind, encouraging, and wise. Little did I know that those kind women were passing me along to the Robespierre of Comstock School. My fifth grade teacher, Mrs. Rich. Mrs. Rich was rich only in the way a rotten mango is rich. She violated international treaties and denied us recess. She made us turn our desk, you know, to face each other, always, always matching up arch classroom enemies in the same group. Mrs. Rich gave me an S minus, satisfactory minus, in citizenship for pitching a girl in the lunch line on her butt. I'd be arrested today, but that was a different era. And boy brain always thinks, you know, I want the girl to notice me, so I'll do the most annoying thing possible. Never works. But above all else, Mrs. Rich was the world's greatest practitioner of the bad apple method of personnel management. If one kid was out of line, we all suffered. If one kid misbehaved, we all were punished. If one kid's assignment wasn't done, we had all had hell to pay. Somewhere in her life, Mrs. Rich had been told that one bad apple spoils the barrel, and she had dedicated her life to proving that saying true. Clearly, Mrs. Rich was not alone in her love for purging bad apples. It's a seductive metaphor for assigning blame and fixing problems. Just locate the bad apple, the bad child, or the lazy athlete, or the unproductive worker, or the whining parishioner. Just locate the bad apple, and you've not only identified the problem, but you've figured out the solution. Toss it away. Then the contaminant is gone, and the group is strong and pure once more. Just as there were great chocolate chip cookies around before Mrs. Field gave them her name, so the bad apple view of the world was around long before Mrs. Rich raised it to high art and inflicted it on Alan Farabee and his raucous classmates. You could even rewrite the theological history of sin in the language of apples and barrels. Many of our most learned theologians could have been Mrs. Rich's henchmen, as if she needed any help. No matter how good we are, no matter how good we are, scowled John Calvin, that first apple was a bad apple, and it has spoiled everything. But such a view has not gone unchallenged. And if Abraham has got things right, and he is sure enough of it to pin God to the wall, then Mrs. Rich was not just a bad teacher, she was banking on the wrong metaphor. Keep in mind during the negotiation that follows that Abraham is God's friend. Abraham is God's choice. But God, following conventional wisdom, looked towards Sodom and saw great wickedness. The normal calculus, the formula that guided Mrs. Rich's life, was that innocent people had power only to save themselves. Guilty people can take down with them others who may be innocent, but the guilty may not be saved by those same innocent people. One good apple cannot salvage a rotten barrel, goes to conventional wisdom. But now the roles reverse, and Abraham becomes the theological mentor of God. And with all due respect for bad apple theology, Abraham presses two questions to God. Will you indeed destroy the innocent with the guilty? Will you indeed destroy the innocent with the guilty? And shall not the judge of all the world do justice? Stop acting like a tyrant, urges Abraham, and act like God. Reverse the metaphor and consider the saving power of a remnant. And then the bargaining begins. Suppose there are 50 righteous within that wicked city. Will you save it? God says, yes. And Abraham is now sort of slightly empowered. He said, well, how about 45? God says, okay. Abraham is getting more confident now. He says, how about 40? God says, if there are 40 righteous, I'll save the city. Abraham takes a big breath. 30? 20? And finally he says, how about if there are 10 righteous? For the sake of 10, says God, I will not destroy Sodom. And the Lord went his way when he had finished speaking to Abraham, and Abraham returned to his place. And in the manner of so many Bible stories, the narrative breaks off at this point, unresolved. As the next chapter of Genesis makes clear, there are lots of wicked people in Sodom. Even Lot, Abraham's nephew, was caught up in the maw of that wretched place. Who was to know if God would honor his promise? Who was to know if bad apple theology was about to be reversed by the judge of all the earth? Well, 10 righteous could not be found. So Sodom was destroyed and the smoke of the land went up like the smoke of a furnace. But the evidence of God's justice presents itself at this point. The great biblical promise that the innocent one can save others, that the good apple can preserve the barrel. That promise sneaks into the story kind of like a postscript. So it was that when God destroyed the cities of the valley, God remembered Abraham and sent Lot out of the midst of the overthrown. It only took one. If I could compress all the Christian gospel into one sentence, that would be it. It only took one. It only took one to save the world. God was getting off the mark until Abraham argued with God about being God. It became clear to Abraham and God, in that order, that God is not a tyrant, but really a God of mercy. It only took one, finally, Jesus, not the new apple, but the new Adam, the one righteous and innocent one, to make good all the rest of us bad apples. More often than not, the ghost of Mrs. Rich hovers over my life, recalling the nightmare of fifth grade, persuading me that we get what we deserve and we get what others deserve. The bad apple view of the world is alive and well. Of that I have no doubt. But then along comes Abraham, standing in your face to God. Far be it from you to do such a thing, said Abraham, to God. So when the time came, God remembered Abraham and saved Lot from the Holocaust. I don't think I ever stood up to Mrs. Rich or challenged her calculus of control. But she's gone now, and I've learned a better calculus, I've seen a better metaphor, and I've known a greater God. I know now that in a world mostly filled with bad apples, it only takes one. I know that the judge of all the earth will do justice. Amen.